Do you like D&D, improv, and a podcast where the DM can't control the player's intrusive thoughts? Well then, Flip of Fate is what you're looking for. This loosely D&D podcast is about four misfits being roped in on an adventure by a wealthy centaur wizard. We also have a three-part Halloween special out now set in the modern world about four teens caught up in a small-town horror. We played that one shot in a simplified D&D system close to the Call of Cthulhu system. Now in our main campaign, we play in D&D 5e. And if you're looking for some nitty, gritty D&D and advanced rule following, you won't find it here. We're just five close friends that enjoy improv and D&D with some chaos mixed in there. So come and check us out. You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts at Flip of Fate. You can also find us on all socials. So stop by and say hi. Again, find us and listen to us at Flip of Fate. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of your show.
Hey, Danger Dangers here with a special Halloween announcement. Part 1 of our Patreon-exclusive Halloween bonus content will be premiering Wednesday, October 16th. Stick around to the end of the episode after the credits and blooper for a sneak preview of that. Remember, you can access any of our bonus content by signing up on Patreon for just $5 a month, or by volunteering as an episode transcript and wiki writer. Shoot an email to dndarkpodcast@gmail.com for more info on that. That's all for now. Enjoy the show.
D&D Dark is an absurd, over-the-top comedy horror adventure that is intended for older audiences. Content warnings can be found in the episode descriptions.
Hello and welcome to D&D Dark, a comedy horror adventure real play podcast loosely based on Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition and starring some of history's most infamous monsters. I'm Danger Dangers, and I'm your host / Crypt Keeper.
Hello, everyone. I'm Aaron, and I play the Phantom of the Opera. I take umbrage with the fact that I'm considered the, like, really evil one of this group. After we took down the witch, Imhotep, sus as hell, stole the card captor's curse witch triple trouble power-up thing. And I don't know what he's going to use it for, wink, but it's not going to be good.
Don't worry about that.
I mean, he says it like that, and now I'm worried.
Very worried.
Always be worried when Daniel becomes Mario.
Hi, everyone. I'm Ben Magnet. I play Mary Frankenstein, our barbarian paladin. And last time, which dice god did I anger? Which one of you mother effers did I piss off that you had to curse my dice that I still couldn't land a single effing hit on a witch? But the good news is we got out of it. Larry has a really cool scythe. And then the man who is too long tried to get his really long bony fingers on a certain book that myself and Imhotep were able to snag before he got to slither off somewhere. And yeah, I know I shouldn't be looking forward to that future fight, but Mary really wants to cut something right now because he is just done. He is like, I have had it with these motherfucking witches in this motherfucking swamp, and I just want to go and smash something that I can actually hit.
Hello, my name is Daniel Cruz, and I play Imhotep the Mummy, our cleric, and you don't need to be sus about the thing with the card. I got a hug out of it. I mean, come on. Who does sus things when the hug is in?
You all made fun of my Ursula voice. What is this?
It was a hug. Nothing bad happens with hugs.
Hello, I'm Grayson. I play Jack Griffin, the Invisible Man, party's rogue. So last battle, we could say, Jack discovered the joys of distance, and his hand crossbow came in handy in that fight a lot. And then we ended up, hugging it out. So I don't know why Imhotep wanted the soul. So I assume that we'll maybe find out later.
Hi, I'm Jordan, and I play Larry Talbot, a lycanthropic warlock. And last time. Okay, so we wrapped up the fight with the witches. Larry turned into a werewolf, and then the werewolf shaped turned into Larry, and then... a man chewed on a witch until she died. So that's how we wrapped up the fight. And then Phantom and Imhotep hugged the wolf then shaped as Larry until he settled down and took a little nappy poo. And then when we awoke, Larry came out about the little friend in his locket, and we all had a very mature conversation about how to move forward with that. And then Larry went off and had the best day of his life. Oh, it was so good. So I think where we'll pick up from Larry going forward in this session is he is now outside, just absolutely beaming.
And none of us were invited, but it's cool.
And with that, let's go back into things. So first things first, Jordan, card of the day.
So here's the thing. We leveled up. We're level 10 now. And at level 10, my cards are different now.
The tarot-based warlock patron subclass that we've been working off of for Larry is one that I took from online that we've been modifying a lot to suit our own ends for this. One of the things that we are doing now, we are reinterpreting what this next level 10 ability that Jordan gets is for our purposes. Basically, going forward, she has complete control to rearrange the order of the deck however she sees fit. So she is in control of which card she gets on any given session from here on out. The only caveat being she cannot repeat any cards until she has gone through the deck. So with that being said, now that you are in control and you have the power to decide what cards show up when, what is your card of the day?
Moon.
You want to burn that now?
No.
So let's see. Well, today's going to be, I think, Ophelia's time. So let me find one that's in the nicest way a bit mid. I choose the world, though. You have resistance to thunder, lightning, and force damage. Spells you cast that deal thunder, lightning, or force damage deal an extra d6 damage. Does not apply to Eldritch Blast. That's helpful, but I'm not going to be able to predict us going into that, so I'll just take that one then.
Sweet. So we're all going to be sparring with Larry.
Yeah. Fight. Okay, that's my pick.
So with that, we will jump back to where we left off. So, Larry, you had just gone off and done the Lotus Pendant. Everyone else was still in Mother Carrionite's cottage. I jokingly invented the Cauldron of Synthesis in order to give Jack a cloak and cape of billowing. And it was originally a joke item, but I realize there's a lot of fun potential in combining your guys' items together. So I'm going to extend the offer for, if we want to fuse any items together, that resource is still available.
I will.
I'm going to do the Hellraiser in the bag of holding.
Oh, God.
I'm kidding.
Just teleports things to hell.
All right. Let me get out my description of the Weasel Blade.
That's even better.
No, not the Weasel Blade.
I wanted to combine the Amethyst Lodestone with my pants and just create pants of flying.
Be prepared for the second that you activate it for your pants to rip off your body and fly away.
Sick.
Is there a way I can sacrifice a potion of healing to heal the skeleton key, or is that not going to work?
Interesting. I will say roll just a straight d20 for luck. I'm going to make this just a 50-50. So 11 or higher, it works. 10 or below, it doesn't. Okay. And if it doesn't, then you'll find mysteriously both of those items are back in your inventory. And like a point-and-click adventure, you'll feel a strange compulsion to say, what was I thinking? I can't use those now.
What was I thinking? I can't use that now.
Awesome.
Well, it was a good idea, though.
Yeah, I rolled a 4.
I'll say Larry's arriving back with the group about this time.
So I imagine after the Lotus, I don't know kind of what the vibe is. I imagine like 5 minutes has gone by since actually using the Lotus. And he just kind of awkwardly walks back into the room because it felt almost like a big goodbye moment. And then he's right back where he is. Kind of unsure, is everybody going to have mustaches in this reality? Like, has anything changed in any major way? I don't know.
The Phantom's mask is on the other side.
Oh no.
Doesn't even make sense.
Jack's clothes are actually invisible.
Oh, speaking of, 100% visibility now.
Oh, shit.
Oh, no.
You're here.
Actually, there was something that I needed to try and do potentially before that.
If you want, like, the last little gasps of invisibility to still be there for you to do your thing, then we can do that.
Yeah. Can we just say that, like, 100% visibility is going to happen, like, either...
I will say by the time you leave the swamp, you will be 100% visible again.
Yeah, okay.
Larry, can I please speak with you in private for a moment?
Well, I'm gonna stroll up all glowy and cheerful, I guess right up to Mary.
And we walk just like outside in the swamp, out of the way of everyone else or out of earshot. Once we wait, as we're like completely alone, I look over to Larry and I just go,
I can see you're in a good mood right now, and I do not want to ruin it. But Lawrence Talbot, what the hell were you thinking? Had Renfield with you this whole time, and you didn't bother to tell us? Do you realize how bad this could have gone? Do you realize what he could have done? I don't care if he's a spirit in some sort of locket. He is dangerous.
All right. Whether it was the right thing or the wrong thing to do, I completely understand. But here is what I was thinking, Mary. We were very upset with Vordenburg because he had a history with Carmilla. That's the whole thing. That I knew that if I brought up Renfield, of all people, everyone would go absolutely cuckoo bonkers. And if we did that, at that current time, he was trying to help me, trying to help us, whether or not there were some big means to the ends, if he was going to screw us over later. Like, okay, that's fine. But if we would have blown up a spot when we weren't ready to deal with him, then that could have put us all in danger immediately. But if he does anything now, we have the scythe. So if that whole thing went wrong, if he decided he wasn't going to work with us and he was going to do some big crazy thing that we weren't expecting, we have the scythe to be able to extract his soul away from the one thing tethering it here.
Lawrence, I'm not mad that you kept the information from us right when you got him. I'm mad that you didn't tell us sooner after we had cooled down a bit.
If things went awry, I just needed to make sure we could handle it. And as soon as we had the means to, that's when I knew I could air everything out. But I'm sorry. It probably would have been fine to tell you guys earlier, but I wasn't sure. And I didn't want to do anything to endanger the group. But, I mean, you're right. It was a gamble. And I apologize.
A gamble that, thankfully, has paid off. But I just want to ask you, as a favor to me and to the rest of the group, next time something like this happens, we tell each other sooner rather than later. Because if the gamble didn't pay off, I don't know what would have been going on. But it just scares me that you had him with you for a long time. I'm not saying he's influenced you, and I've accepted the fact that he was going to help us in our war against Dracula. I will accept his help, whether I do not like it, and I sure as hell do not like him. Hell, if we get Vordenburg back, there are still a lot of things he and I need to hash out, especially after since I took his bloody oath. But next time, try to tell us a little sooner so we all know what's at stake. So we can all know exactly, no pun intended, the cards we have at our hand and what we should effectively play.
Absolutely.
And I just go and give Larry a big giant bear hug.
Aww.
You are quite possibly the best friend I have in this world. Besides from my namesake. And if anything were to happen to you, or Jack, or Eric, or Imhotep, or any one of you, I lose my family. I don't want to lose my family again.
And Larry, just continuing on this very emotion-filled day, is going to... His arms can't completely wrap around you, but he's going to try his best and squeeze as hard
close
as he
enough.
Can. Yeah, it's like fingertips, like, almost touch. You won't lose us. You won't lose me, you won't lose us. We're together. So now that we're together, and we're in this for the long run, let's get back in there and let's save English. All right?
Yeah. Let's go kill ourselves a goddamned vampire.
That's what I'm talking about. All right.
All right, and I think that's a good time to cut to Jack and Imhotep.
Imhotep.
He's kind of cleaning off the last bit of stuff off of the blade. Yes, Jack, how can I? Hi.
Oh, right.
as he kind of realizes you're totally visible now.
Sorry about that.
Nothing to apologize about. Just, I knew it was happening. Still a bit startling. You're quite handsome, though.
Thanks. You've had this healing magic this entire time.
I am granted powers by the gods, yes.
Just out of curiosity, do you have, if someone were to sustain a serious wound, do you have the ability to potentially either regrow the skin or a very minor limb?
Maybe.
Hmm.
I have spells that would allow me to... I do not know about an entire limb or... No,
maybe a toe or a finger.
Oh, a toe or finger?
I'm sure that there's got to be some part of me that's still invisible, and I think I have an idea on how to preserve that invisibility for potential research. But I don't know how much damage it can do.
What do you mean you don't know how much damage a finger can do? Last I checked, fingers don't do a whole lot of damage.
Unless it's the emotional kind.
That's a good point, Mary.
Put away my finger of death spell.
Yes. do I know the part that is still potentially invisible?
I would say you could sever a patch of skin and recover from it with some healing magic.
Thank God.
And like some part of like one of your arms or your shoulder or someplace non-obtrusive for the sake of not delving, like not examining too deeply what D&D healing is. Let's not do any, like, fingers or toes, but...
Thank you. I was afraid Jack was going to carry around a little toe in a jar. I was like, no!
Okay. Do you have any... I don't know how to ask this. Do you have any numbing agents? Because I have a feeling this is going to hurt a lot.
Oh, I have the... traditional, classic, Egyptian way to help you manage your pain during these trying times. Reaches into the bag. He pulls out a leather strap.
Yeah.
Excellent. actually, this might be a good chance to offer a form of recompense. Phantom?
I'm busy. What's that?
Do you want to carve off a bit of skin?
Ew, no. What?
Or, you know, fine. I guess, I'll just do it myself.
If you want to, I can, like, throttle you if it's just about dying. No.
I need something for examination later.
These science people are so fucked up.
So, at that, Jack will just kind of like let him do whatever he's doing because he seems busy. And he'll find what he sees as the potential most sterile spot and proceeds to take out his normal dagger and looks for that patch of skin. Don't know where it is. Would you say it's like on a forearm, an arm, his side, a leg?
Tip of the nose.
Maybe.
I will say shoulder.
Okay. Imhotep, if you're ready, I'm ready.
So we're actually doing this? We're really doing this?
Either it's going to be me or it's going to be you, because I think Phantom's busy, and I thought Phantom might enjoy taking a little bit of blood from me.
There's a lot to unpack there.
This has the same energy as middle school kids piercing their ears at home for the first time. Of like, you gotta do it, or I gotta do it, but can we get like an ice cube?
Yeah, very much.
But if we don't do it fast, mom's gonna come home, she's gonna be mad. The lot to unpack is with the whole, I think Phantom wants to hurt me thing. I'm like, okay, how does that make you feel? Could I? What spell do you think I would need in order to like, counteract what we're about to do, Dan? Like, what level of a spell? Like a healing word?
At least a cure wounds.
Well, obviously. But I mean, like, I have...
Don't give him ideas. Take the cure wounds. What's wrong with you?
I'm just, like, looking at, like, what I have for healing, and I'm coming to realize it's not a lot. It's a lot of mass healing, so I guess cure wounds.
Rub a bit of dirt in it.
I guess upcast a cure wounds to level 2.
Okay, that'll work. For flavor, before we do this little operation, can he write the spell, like, onto, like, a piece of parchment and, like... have that be the spell,
like a band-aid?
That was gonna be the joke. It's like it's a mini spell scroll that he's literally gonna slap on like a band-aid and it's just gonna start healing.
Sure.
Awesome.
So yeah, he writes it on like a small piece of papyrus that he just happens to have with him in the bag, hold it in one hand, goes to take the dagger from Jack. So what am I doing this at?
He's going to open up his vest and undo the buttons on his shirt, and then pull over his shoulder, and you'll see the small bit of skin that's still invisible, and you'll see just surrounding over it, there's a bit of skin that looks like the skin itself is growing on top of the invisibility.
Hmm. Gross. Okay.
So that part right there, that's what I need.
Hey, Dan, here's a silly question. How long ago has it been since we started talking to Carrion?
It's been at least overnight.
Okay, then never mind. I was gonna say, is the bottle of Riz that we definitely just said was a bottle of Fireball still gonna be inhibiting my ability to carve?
Depending on how funny it is, I'll allow it.
I mean, I was definitely gonna ask if we had any alcohol, so that way Jack could just get drunk or tipsy at the moment.
Larry has an alcoholic beverage. A phantom. Somebody's got alcoholic beverage.
Mary has it.
I do.
So he takes the dagger and he's like, hands him the little piece of leather and goes, I might want to bite that.
Can we get...
Did you just me?
I'm sorry. I need... Yes. Well, yes, I am.
Use your words.
I am a child. Okay. I need alcohol.
I'm a child and I need alcohol.
Those are two things that I really genuinely think should not mix. I'm just going to say.
Ooh, Jack's moving to the front of the needs therapy line. Guess who's taking a backseat?
That sounds like something you have to discuss with your therapist. It sounds a lot like the really bad Rorschach test feedings. I read this as, I am a child and I need alcohol.
Did someone say alcohol? I got some alcohol.
I don't understand why you're super excited about this, but yes, okay.
From a quick Google, before the mid to late 1800s, there was no minimum drinking age in the UK.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I was just going to say, the drinking age wasn't established for a long, long time, but I knew.
It was late 1800s, so it was probably established after this.
Yes.
Nice. It was this moment right this. Here.
Good. Hey, if you want some, just save a little bit for me. I kind of want to try some of that. I have no idea. What is this, Larry? Whiskey or rum?
It has 3 X's on the
it
label.
It is generic alcoholic beverage.
Cool. Haven't tried the generic brand before.
It is a bottle of liquor.
I was going to say it's isopropyl alcohol, like rubbing alcohol.
Oh, God. I give the bottle to Jack and just look at him as like, just save me a sip or two. I want to try it.
Okay. We'll see.
Are you ready now?
Yeah. And he just proceeds to drink as much as he can in like one gulp because he just wants that buzz feeling. And I have a -1 on my constitution, so I'm hoping it gets me there decently quick.
Okay. And he starts to like carefully slice and carve.
Oh, like slow?
You doing okay? I mean, okay, we're trying to be careful about this, right?
Wait, that's what you needed it for?
That's what we needed it for.
What is...
Is there anything left in the bottle?
That's up to you.
You know, I'm just going to say there's just like a shot and a half left, and Mary just downs it and then just goes... Oh, God, you people drink this stuff? This is... Oh, why is it spicy? Why is it burn?
Good old fire water.
Oh, Larry, why did you... This is terrible. This is nothing like this. Oh, God, why do you drink this?
I'm gonna take it back from him and take a few more swigs and then cork it and put it down.
Do I even want to ask? Was I gone long? Why are we carving him? Why are we skinning him?
You know, he asked me... I'm not gonna question it. I was just going to do it and figure at some point down the line it would all play out and be.
I'll question it. Hey, Jack, why are we carving you?
Needed that.
You need to be carved?
It would have just put his hands up. I don't know if it's a weird sexual thing for him. I'm just doing it, and I'm really hoping I'm still not going back down there again.
He's going to kind of stumble over to some vials and hand it over to Imhotep. Put that in the vial so I could save it for later.
And it has this lump of invisible skin on the blade and just kind of carefully plops it in and goes, if it wasn't for the blood, you wouldn't even know there's anything in there. And he pops the cork on it and hands it to Jack.
Yeah, so now all you see, I assume, is maybe some a little bit of muscle just on his shoulder.
Add to your inventory a sample of invisible skin.
Gross. Slaps the mini spell scroll on it.
Wait, you in Egypt, did you guys create synthetic skin?
No. It's just papyrus, dude. It's got magic on it.
Dude, it's got magic on it.
I've watched enough hoof shearing videos to know what salicylic acid is.
Heck yeah.
I'm so glad I'm not the only one who's watched this stupid hoof videos.
Dude, I love the hoof videos. I don't know what it is.
That is about the NeuroDivergent group. One easy step.
All right, so you've got your salicylic acid wrap.
All right, after that, Jack's going to go ahead and keep the bottle nearby, but try not to drink it while he feels nice and fuzzy.
All right, so while all of that was going on, let's jump to Phantom.
Phantom is leaning out the window, and he's like, God, science people so fucked up. What the hell? And he turns around, and he walks inside to the cauldron. He looks inside, and there's a billowing coat in here for some reason. Whatever. He throws it on the ground, and it's billowing on the floor. And then he produces the conch, and he looks at it. He holds it softly, and he says, I heard you helping me during that battle. You've always been a metaphorical strength for me, something to lean on, something to strive for. And he puts the conch down in the bottom of the cauldron. I'm going to try to set you free, but otherwise, if that doesn't work, maybe we can make you my strength a little more, literally. And he draws his rapier, and he flips it upside down, and he stabs it down, smashing the conch in the cauldron.
Shit. Okay.
All right, and the cauldron explodes with magical energy, bubbling and boiling up, as the voice of Christine lifts up, wraps around the sword, and it begins to transform before you. And go ahead and add to your inventory a singing sword.
Hell yeah, says Aaron. But ooh, says Phantom, well, I had hoped that that you could return home. But hell yeah!
So to describe the item that you have just acquired, this is your legendary weapon. The rapier of a true maestro, infused with the operatic voice of Christine Daae. The singing sword is a legendary weapon with the power to invoke inspiration or dread from those who hear its song. The hilt of the sword is the conch shell, with the blade spiraling out of its open cavity in the form of a music staff.
Sick.
You gain a +2 bonus to attack and damage rolls made with this magic weapon. In addition, it has the following properties. You may use your spellcasting modifier instead of strength or dexterity for attack and damage rolls.
Oh, thank God.
And as a bonus action, you can extend one use of your bardic inspiration die to cause the sword to erupt into song for a number of rounds equal to the result of your roll. The song can be melodic or discordant. If the song is melodic, you and all allied creatures within 30 feet of you get a +1d4 bonus to all attack rolls and saving throws. If the song is discordant, all hostile creatures within 30 feet of you gain a -1d4 penalty to all attack rolls and saving throws.
Hell yeah, Jordan, you're never going to use Bane again.
I'm free!
So yeah, basically, you get an aura of Bless or Bane as you use it, and it lasts for however many rounds you roll on an expended Bardic Inspiration die.
That's super cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And I know I gave a brief description of its appearance, but if you want to flavor your new Keyblade skin however you want.
No, I really liked your description. All I'll say is Phantom goes to sheath it, and obviously he has a fucking rapier sheath. So he's just like, and then he unmends the sheath and remends it sort of fit. It's like a really weird shape because of the like spiraling out thing, but it's cool. Anyway, I'll go out and see what, whatever. Oh, I walk out just in time to see Imhotep, like, put his hands up. Like, is this, like, a sexual thing for him? I'm like, what is happening?
As Jack's stumbling and he sees you come out of the building, he'll look past you, and you'll actually see his eyes are, like, half closed. And he looks past you, and he sees the cloak billowing. And he's like, huh, I think that one's mine. So he just, like, starts stumbling over to you and then past you, grabs the coat, puts it on, and then as he puts it on, something presses up against his side. Oh, this is going to be extra fun now. And he pulls out his grapple gun and aims through the window and fires it.
Oh my god. Where are you going?
I don't know. But it's going to be extremely fun.
Jack, honey. Jack.
You've already gone.
You know, drinking the alcohol was a not good idea.
All you guys are going to be hearing is just little tiny silent shots as he's practicing with his grapple gun.
I'm a Spider-Man through the woods.
Basically.
Mary, should we try and follow him? See where he ends up?
Yeah, we probably should. Just make sure he doesn't get hurt.
Right. Oh, and as we're chasing him down, I could tell you about what happened during the lotus.
Oh, the lotus bloomed?
Yeah.
You know, I was going to ask you about that. I have no idea what that thing does. I'm pretty sure Imhotep did, but I was just like, eh. Because when we got that thing from Grimhilda, I was just like, neat.
You know, full disclosure, we got the thing from Grimhilda, and I just also kind of said neat.
Oh, never mind. We just didn't know what it was. We were just both like, neat.
That's all right. I'll explain everything.
I just wanted to bed. The flower was just a bonus.
Yeah, the real reward was us killing a witch together, right?
Honestly, though.
Well, you know, both things were good. I'll tell you all about it, Mary, as we are lightly jogging towards wherever Jack's ending up.
Okay, let's go.
Imhotep, it seems like they've got it. You want to go hang out at the carriage?
Yeah, sure, why not?
All right, well, we're waiting for you.
Sick. All right, so I guess some time passes as eventually.
So some time passes. The fog is starting to dissipate, but it is not gone yet. And Imhotep, you can still feel some power and influence emanating from the playing card that you have in your possession with the Weird Sisters inside of it.
You know, I'll meet up with you at the cart in a little bit. I have to do something really quickly.
Now, Imhotep, I think we both know that I can see when someone is doing a shifty scheme. It's very recognizable to me. Have fun. Yeah, I'll see you there.
Inspiration.
Yeah, he's just like, yeah, you know, that checks out. And he's going to go find some place anywhere that's like alone where Jack isn't going to actually swing in on him. Just going to find a spot and try to commune with Fiona and Belial.
As you isolate yourself and as you pull out the playing card and the contract, some of the ink begins to lift up lightly from the contract, singeing away with small infernal whispers passing by you. It seems to get excited by the presence of this card, and the witches on, like, the illustration of the card back away slowly. They don't seem desperate, but they're not excited by the presence of this contract.
So yeah, he's just gonna hold the card in one hand, the contract in the other, and he's gonna kind of go, oh shit, I can't, like, just call them anymore, can I? How do I get in contact with Fionn and Belial?
When the contract is signed, they will be able to communicate with you through the contract.
Hey, idea. How about as Jack is Spider-Man careening through the woods, he passes by you real quick, and so Mary and I just kind of lightly jog past, and I see you there with the card and the contract, and I'm like, oh, Imhotep, how's it going with the whole card soul thing?
It's, you know, could be worse. Kind of flicks the contract because at the moment Imhotep is just like not sure how to get them to talk. Like, I just need you guys to answer the phone. Hello? Holding the card still.
I have a dumb idea. It might not work, but it might work. And Larry's going to take the scroll of Speak with Dead out of his pocket that Jack gave him like ages ago. He's going to hold it in one hand and he's going to point his finger down on the cards with the other, cast Speak with Dead, and then like in Lilo and Stitch, his mouth is going to open up and like a radio playing, the voices of the witches are going to be projected through and out of Larry.
Wow, this is troubling.
You have 5 questions. Make them count.
Did we take your broom?
No, shush, hush. You're not here.
Yes, you have 4 questions. I would suggest that you not waste them and get to the point. You have something you want me to agree with. Convince me that it is worth my while.
Oh, you are making this hard for me. Haha, being very careful about how I word you.
The way that I see it, we have roughly 2 alternatives. Why should we go to the Hells and not let ourselves perish elsewhere?
Because the Hells are more fun for you, maybe?
Oftentimes.
I am going to ask one of my questions. Should you perish within this card, what will become of your souls?
Nom-nom.
That is unknown to me. However, if I were to posit a guess, we would be taken to the Abyss.
Ooh, I know a few things of the Abyss. I kind of flexes the hand where the parasite used to be. What Fionn and Belial offer to you in exchange for signing my contract will be more pleasant than whatever the wolf has for you. I feel confident that Sister Sycorax could probably agree to that.
It was pretty terrible in there, I'm not going to lie.
I offer you a place where your souls may still find some usefulness and will likely be treated in a better way than Om-nom-nom-nom, I believe was how it was worded.
Yeah, Larry nods as his mouth's still projecting.
That was not how it was worded, and you have 2 questions remaining. However, I see your point. I hope you're enjoying yourself negotiating from a position of leverage.
I am very much, actually, yes. Pretty cool, actually, not gonna lie.
What is in it for you? Why do you need for us to sign?
In life, I promised my soul to my god Osiris. As it stands, should I perish again, my soul will belong to the demon lords of hell, of the Hells. By giving them you, I am off the proverbial hook and also the literal hook.
So should I refuse? Your torment will continue.
Should you refuse, your torment will begin.
Ooh, I like that.
You've gotten good at this.
I had to deal with way pickier, way weirder, way meaner, way grosser deal people than you.
Spare me your flattery. I shall agree. And I verbally consent to the terms of the agreement. You have 2 questions remaining. Should you wish to do anything with them? Should you not? I will sign.
He kind of just looks at the others. Anybody else?
Above the table, I do have one question.
Jack says while flying by on his grapple gun.
I have one question.
Mary's just chasing him. Is like, why is he swinging and flying around like some sort of bat? Man, this is so annoying. Get down
Larry's
here.
Just like, I don't really have to now.
As he sees Imhotep talking to the witches, he forgets to look at where he's going. And
look out for that tree.
Basically, yeah. While he's retracting his line, he runs into a tree. And then he just topples over, falls into a bush. And he's like, huh.
And no one can find you because you're hidden.
Home sweet home.
He pops up and hair's all shaggy. His hat's missing for the moment. And he puts his goggles up above his eyes. He says, who's the one that deals with the sicknesses?
Granny Grimhilda, you have one question remaining.
Fuck!
What was the substance that was on me?
Can you clarify the question?
There was a bacterial-like substance I had accidentally come across. And I don't know what it is. How can I find it? Is it somewhere nearby?
All right, I have to think about that for a second because that was three different questions.
So to clarify, he was hoping that Grimhilda could identify the substance that was on him when they originally came in contact with each other.
Can you identify the substance? Yes. Last question. Goodbye.
Yeah, basically. That's what I'm kind of assuming. Because, of course, Jack is just looking for answers at the moment.
Because your question was, what was the substance that was on me? There's a lot of possible answers to that question.
There's so many.
The way that you clarified was, like, the bacteria-like substance. What is it? Where can I find it? Is there more of it?
Yeah, I'm trying to connect some dots.
It is a substance that exists in hostile environments. Unfortunately, you're all out of questions, so I cannot clarify further.
You have exhausted your five questions, but a deal is a deal.
And the signature of Mother Carrionite spawns on the contract. And as that signature forms, the card catches fire and begins to slowly disintegrate as the ink lifts off of the contract and also catches fire, levitating above it. And you hear echoing from the fire of the contract.
Hey, little man. Hey, looks like you got this contract signed. If we can finally put this one away and finally put away forever, where we won't have to deal with it ever again.
I will be honest. I didn't think you would pull it off, but you impressed me by fulfilling this little agreement of ours. However, I do recall asking you specifically to deliver their souls to me and get their signatures before killing them. I think we might need to kick this down the road a little bit to get another favor.
I think we shouldn't. I really think we shouldn't.
I don't want to do additional paperwork, so I added an addendum. Because Mother Carrionite was neither alive nor dead, but fiend, she was in full consciousness when she was speaking through the Speak With Dead. According to me, Fearon, because I'm the one that has to do the goddamn amendments, every time you add another thing for him to do, I say this is good. We got the witch's souls. They're packed nicely into a nice little piece of paper. We can file them, sort them, be done with the whole thing. Congrats, little man. You're free of us, at least for now.
Thank Osiris.
Just consider yourself lucky that you put this idiot in charge of your fate.
You know? I'll take it.
Since I do not have the power to extend your torment, consider your favor fulfilled and our business concluded. I will say, however, that I cannot guarantee that the nightmares will cease.
Thanks for that.
You can thank yourself for that. Any tethers you still have to the Hells are on you.
Deuces.
And the contract disintegrates, and the card disintegrates.
You know what? I'm just going to let that roll off my shoulders and be fine with it for now. That is a problem for future Imhotep. I am going to the car now.
To the car.
And as the ashes of the contract and the card sink down through the ground, they let off a small sulfuric smell that then begins to ripple and emanate outward, eating away at the fog over this swamp. And the fog slowly begins to lift as life breathes back in.
Aww.
To this environment. The bodies begin to sink back below the muck. Some of the plant life that has been withered away and gnarled slowly begins to take on a more habitable form. The wildlife gets a little bit less erratic, and this swamp starts to turn back into wetlands.
It is healing.
Did we actually... Are we going to leave a place better than when we arrived?
You know, I think we actually are.
This is a first. All right. Look at us.
Well, grease my cheeks till they can cook some foie gras.
Imhotep, upon hearing the phantom say that, he's going to step into the carriage, close the door, and just stare at him. You haven't been in contact with the Hells, have you? That is completely and totally independent of a certain someone?
I look at my sandwich card. Well, I don't know about never been in contact.
Cool. That's it.
All right. Are we all ready to go? Is is Jack still in the bush? Can we scoop him up?
He's somewhere in the bushes. I've been trying to find him. The bastard's hidden. Jack!
Hey.
Jack!
Give me a moment. And he's somewhat sobering up a little bit, and he's it looks like he's furiously writing something in his book he's been carrying.
Hey, what you doing?
Just slowly putting some, what's the word? Connecting some things that I've been mulling over. As much as I hate to say it, I think the man who is too long may have had a point, and there's something that I think I have to reconsider, but I've still got to try and figure out, do you know necessarily if there are any local hostile environments or if there's anywhere else that might have a laboratory?
I mean, when I think of hostile environment, I don't think of what you're thinking of like bacteria hostile environments.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't clarified.
I think of the most dangerous place for us is London right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only laboratory I know of is his father's, but I don't know if we want to go all the way down there.
Ooh, hey, now that a certain someone's out in the open, should we ask him?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You absolutely do. Come on.
Yeah, me either.
Wakey. Bad. Let's go.
I believe Imhotep currently has Renfield.
Yes. So I imagine we'll drag him, drag Jack to the carriage where everyone's sitting to meet up with Imhotep and Eric and possibly ask some questions, maybe? Take that as a yes. Let's go.
Let's do it.
What is it that you wish to know? Oh, you're real quiet all of a sudden.
What do we want to know?
Elbow Jack.
Jack said something about hostile and I don't know. Jack, you say it.
Sorry. During your time that you were here. God, this is so weird. I feel like I'm talking to... never mind.
Speaking to a ghost, yes, it's a little on the nose, but do continue.
Hey, watch the sass, bud. We had to kill you once.
During your time that you were here, were there any laboratories or were there any maybe hostile environments, such as naturally hostile environments? So not necessarily people trying to kill you, but we could say places that have extreme hot and cold weather, or even potential geysers or hot springs or something
like
that.
Well, if you're looking for special and unusual bacterium-like substances in a laboratory-type environment, this is awfully convenient. But it's the direction that I've been urging you to go from the beginning this entire time.
So back in Windsor.
Gonna make him have an aneurysm.
No, you fucking idiot, not Windsor.
God bless.
The Big Ben Clock Tower. There is a laboratory inside the clock tower where, let's just say, experiments have been run on behalf of the master. You'll find everything that you need in there. It is also the location of one of his coffins, and it is also a stronghold where a lot of his personal firepower is coming from, so it would be very wise, for a number of reasons, to make haste back to London and to the Big Ben Clock Tower.
He doesn't know how this works, so he's going to put his hand over the locket, thinking that it can't understand him now. Just wanting to double check, do we want to go to London, or do we have something that we need to finish up in Windsor now that we have the scythe?
I think we need to focus on the bigger threat, which is Dracula. And then once all that's said and done, then we can go back for those souls.
Isn't London technically on the way to Windsor?
I believe so.
I mean, why not just take care of the things in London first, then we can go free the souls and head back to Stratford after that, hopefully. Oh, that's, you know, I'll call Marlo after we take care of the souls in Windsor. But let's, yeah, I think we need to take out Dracula stuff at Big Ben. And then I look to the locket and I move Jack's hand away. He's like, you said firepower. Please elaborate.
It's, you'll see. You'll understand when you get there.
Well, it sounds like that's our place to go.
And Mary's sitting there thinking, it's like, if we can get a hold of the weapons Dracula has and use them against him. Ooh,
absolutely.
Oh, the barbarian's coming out to play.
To clarify, I'm not being coy. It's legitimately difficult to explain, but you'll understand when you have context.
Okay. Well, all right. One final question. Can these weapons hurt him? Him being Dracula.
Potentially, if you can control them.
Fuck it, good enough for me. Let's go.
Say less, queen. All right, I guess we're heading out.
All right. So you leave the wetlands of South Downs, and I'm assuming you're making your way directly to London.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Insert London calling joke here again.
While we're still on the road and outside of London, Mary, I'm just going to hand you this card for whenever you're ready to call Marlo. Because you say that you have a plan, and if you need a little extra incentive for him, let me know. I still have that formula.
Thanks, Jack. Although, to be perfectly honest, I think I want you on that call with me because he likes you more than he does me. But let's make this call together soon, if you're okay with that.
Yeah, that's fine. And he'll tuck it away in one of his pockets. This coat actually has this really nice new feature. If I get too warm, I could actually just make it breeze a little bit.
It looks really fucking cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
How long have you had that coat, Jack? It's really, really cool.
God. look at that. I can see the Eiffel Tower. No, that's not the Eiffel Tower.
It's okay. You're not from here. You're not from around here. It's fine. We understand.
I do not understand.
As you begin making your journey back to London,
Once you start to approach the outskirts, the road begins to supernaturally stretch, lengthen, and wind, and the pathway begins to disorient you slightly. You are suddenly moving at an upward trajectory along cliff sides and hillsides. The ground seems to be shifting and moving, and the path seems to stretch farther and farther away. And the horses begin to struggle.
Guys, I'm getting a little car sick.
As they make their way down the path.
I don't remember the trail being this wild before.
It wasn't. Something's going on, and I don't like it.
And Renfield will emerge from the locket. I see that the lair is now officially his own. I have some experience with this. Allow me to take the reins and I can get you there.
Huh?
Can you actually drive a carriage?
So, when you say emerges from the locket, or is, like, actually, does he have hands?
Yeah.
Basically a, like, translucent ghost-like specter emerges from the locket.
Whoa!
Mary just looks over and goes, oh shit, ghosts!
That's new!
And Mary, like, puts his hand in and out of, like, Renfield's shoulder. It's like, can you feel that? Oh my god, this is so weird.
Yes, and it's very uncomfortable. Please stop.
Okay. Mary just does it one more time. It's like, that's what the time you're being a dick.
Oh, good. We're putting him back together. Jack, I hope you're ready to tear him apart again.
If it needs calling, then absolutely.
Hey, Jack got it last time. I called dibs on the next time.
All right, but you were saying that you can drive us through these paths?
Yes. Brace yourselves, but this is familiar territory for me, so I'll get you there.
Okay.
So he phases through the front of the carriage and takes the reins, and if you are looking out the windows, you see that your carriage suddenly moves in fast motion. And the landscape warps around you. Like the beginning of Dracula and Nosferatu.
Yeah!
Good.
Are there oh shit bars in this carriage? Or am I just being, are we just being tossed like salad?
There's some little handholds on the sides.
Grabbing on for dear life.
If you need, you know what? Mary is sitting in between like in Eric and Lore and Larry. And I just reach across, essentially using my arms as seatbelts to keep them from fall, from moving all over the place.
Mom seatbelt! Yeah!
I was just going to say that, meanwhile, Phantom and I are literally just bouncing all over the carriage.
I got mom seat belted. You're bouncing alone.
Yeah, it's you, Emotep.
I guess. Oh, Emotep.
And as you arrive at the gates to the city, they are heavily patrolled and guarded, and the sky is completely impenetrable, blocked out by smoke as an ashy residue covers all of the buildings and all of the materials around you. And there is an inescapable sulfuric smell as the land is permanently cloaked in darkness.
It's crazy. It's so dark out there. Isn't it midday?
Well, didn't he say something about it always being night?
The sun.
Yeah.
He blacked out the sun.
This is awful.
I think in another time, I might have been very curious about all the advancements, but I don't know if this is meant to be.
None of this feels natural. Even all of the advancements feel unnatural. They feel like they should not be happening in the way they are.
Mary's just looking out at the, I assume there's still billowing smokestacks, just like pouring black smoke into the sky, right?
Absolutely. They are everywhere.
All right. Mary just looks out and it's like,
the world needs the light. This is dangerous. This, it can't be good. Look, I know most of us like to operate during the dark and we have things like we do during the dark, but we need the sun.
Oh no, I'm pro-sun.
I'm pro-sun all the way. But this, this can't be good for the people. It's, and I don't use this word lightly, revolting.
Well, speaking of people, we're going to get their opinions very, very soon.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Jack's going to go and start pulling out his documentation for his, what was it, Jeffrey Radcliffe persona.
And Mary's going to hide in the far corner of the carriage.
I think Larry's going to be so distracted by the, like, heavy smoke and stink of sulfur in the air with his, like, sensitive dog nose, is going to take out that handkerchief and just, like, cover his face to try and stop some of it. But it's incredibly distracting.
And the carriage pulls up to some guards that are lit on either side by torches that make their way across the buildings, providing some bit of light. There are still gas lamps making their way up and down the streets, but generally it is just raw fire from torchlight. A couple of guards approach the carriage as the specter of Renfield slinks back through the front of the carriage and retreats back into the amulet. And they come knocking on the door as they say,
"State your purpose for transit."
Jack, I assume you've got this?
Yeah, we're going to be just passing through. He's going to produce his persona for Jeffrey Radcliffe with the seal of Dracula's dragon.
Roll deception with advantage. The DC is 24.
Holy crap.
But because you are disguised, you have advantage on this.
27.
Ooh.
Very deceptive.
I think 27's good.
All right, Mr. Radcliffe, you are free to continue on. Follow the path of the torches and you'll make your way through the other side of the city. And just be careful. There's plenty of eager, overly enthusiastic citizens that are doing their best for our new Lord and Savior, Count Dracula.
Oh my God.
Oh, Lord and Savior.
Lord and Savior.
Stick to the light and you shouldn't have any problem with the demons.
Casual.
Make your way on through. If you're careful and keep your eye out, you might be able to see the Count himself making one of his grand speeches.
Oh no.
Will do. Thank you very much.
Yay!
And the guards part, and you make your way further in to London.
So dark and grimy. Oh,
my God. Oh shit!
There's the big man himself.
Oh shit! Uh-oh. Oh shit!
Oh yeah, if we keep a careful eye out, he's like 20 feet away.
Guess there's just that much smog in the air.
If you look very carefully, 20 feet away.
As you continue down along the path, you see crowds of people are formed around a makeshift stage where Dracula is standing atop a pile of gold and trinkets and monetary tribute, holding up and crushing in his hands a shadow demon that withers out of existence, and the crowd cheers. And you can hear lightly as you approach, as Dracula is standing above this hoard of gold that he is beginning to accumulate beneath him.
People of the English countryside, you have much to be proud of. With your loyalty, assistance, and tribute, we continue to hold back the scourges that infest this land and keep the borders of our empire secure. It is because of you that we may usher in the evolution of the British Empire into the Empire of Dracul. May these new scientific marvels embolden the bravest among you to step forth and allow yourselves to be reborn as my knights.
Sick.
And as the carriage is passing by, Dracula makes direct eye contact with all of you.
Oops.
And smirks as he begins to pull the gold away. He then turns over his shoulder and says, "You may take the stage, Doctor," before he disappears, taking the gold with him, using a lair action.
That's all of London.
A billowing cloud of darkness encompasses him, completely blocking out all visibility within a 20-foot sphere. So this aura and essence of darkness springs up around him.
Damn.
Completely enveloping him and the gold. And by the time it fades away, it is all gone, and the stage is emptied as a man steps forward to take his place in the center of the podium, and he addresses the crowd.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of most ages, these are desperate times. But we continue to stand victorious, thanks to my esteemed mind and your contributions. I have but to think of a thing, and it is created. Allow me to mortify and conquer your curiosity. And let this exhibition begin!
And a small cluster of guards approach the stage.
Behold, the Knights of Dracul. Stand back. You and I are about to place ourselves in some peril.
One of the guards grimaces, sweats profusely, and then spits out a fireball into the sky.
Oh, gross.
You see? I can unlock this potential in each and every one of you.
Oh no.
For these gifts and more are waiting if you can cast aside the limitations of the human mind and bravely face up to your potential.
Oh no.
Yes, the existence of a man is a small thing to take, but a mighty thing to employ. And I shall use my expertise to employ these and more. Those of you who are willing to volunteer yourselves, come with me as we make further progress and discoveries. For everyone else, thank you for your time and your generosity. Remember, your contributions make my miracles possible. Until next time, I'll leave you with my latest miracle. Behold, as I, Dr. Henry Jekyll, demonstrate the secret of invisibility.
That motherfucker!
No!
Oh, no. Oh, what an asshole. What a fucking asshole.
And with a potion in hand, he smashes it on the ground, and he and all of the knights that had stepped forward disappear.
No!
We are the outcasts, the misfits, you might say. We deal with the nightmares that you run away from every single day. We know the world is a gruesome little place, but us outsiders, we've developed quite a taste for the grisly and morbid, the ghastly and the horrid. We know it's awful, dreadful, but we like it. Just another haunted night, shrouded with unearthly fright. So when you're oh so terrified, you know who to call. The world is falling apart, we'll never take it to heart. So monsters and creatures and spirits and specters and all, let's all have a ball.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of D&D Dark, created, hosted, and edited by myself, Danger Dan Jers, with artwork by Jordan Nelson. Special thanks to our patrons, including Billy Bob Jones, Adenine, Bro Nichiwa, Pyropat, and Sparks Witty. If you want to join our cult and hear your name entered into the pool of credit shoutouts, as well as get access to our fan Discord, bonus mini campaigns, and one-shots, then head on over to our Patreon and sign up for just $5 a month. If you want to help us out in other ways, spread the word to your friends and family, or leave us a review at ratethispodcast.com/dndark. D&D Dark's cast this episode was Jordan Nelson as Larry Talbot, the Wolfman, Daniel Cruz as Imhotep, the Mummy, Aaron Coffold as Eric, the Phantom of the Opera, Ben Magnet as Mary, the Frankenstein Monster, and Grayson Norman as Jack Griffin, the formerly Invisible Man. This episode also featured Fabrice from the Dread and Breakfast podcast as Dr. Henry Jekyll and Mr. Edward Hyde. Our theme song and outro is Let's All Have a Ball by Ryan White Maloney and Tony Carboni, recorded at True North Studios, Las Vegas. Additional music this episode was provided by Cloud Road Music and Alexander Lapko. Listen to new episodes Wednesdays, anywhere you find podcasts.
You have one question remaining.
Danielle.
Yes?
Ask if she was really into you or if it was just like a tactic.
Was it too low?
The fans want to know.
Does anybody else have any actual real questions?
It's a real question. My enjoyment is distracted until I know.
Hello and welcome to D&D Dark Presents Muppet Alien. I am your host and game mother, Daniel Cruz.
It's time to light the light.
Captain Miller, wait for me!
There's no way. It's been 75 years.
There is a way, because that's how long this ship has been missing, according to Weyland-Yutani records.
Check the radar to see what it is that Davis was looking for. And to, make sure that it happens. Hi-ya!
You push the button, you hear the rumble of the elevator shaft from the elevator rising. When the door opens, you can see that there has been a firefight in here.
Do we want to take the stairs?
So as long as you didn't roll over a 6, you guys managed to keep it together. Just barely.
So hopefully we're looking for Muppet reviews.
Well, if you're gonna be making comments like that, I'm gonna have to charge you.
You charge me? We are on a mission by Weyland-Yutani. You can't charge me. I'm the one charging you.
Listen. Semantics, alright?
Alright. I've got one question for all of you here. What is happening?
D&D Dark presents Muppet Alien. Premiering October 16th, 2024, only on patreon.com/dndarkpodcast.
It's time to meet the Muppets on the Muppet Show.